While we prepare to emerge from several weeks of lockdown tomorrow, many people behind the scenes have been busy designing the messaging to guide us there along the way. Duncan Grieve, who's a friend of the show and founder and managing editor of The Spin-Off, has written an in-depth feature on the lockdown and New Zealand's response. It's called The Epic Story of New Zealand's Communications-Led Fight Against COVID-19. You can find a link on our website, and Duncan's on the line now to tell us more. Hi, Duncan.
Kia ora, Jesse.
Kia ora. Your story begins in a not very auspicious way, the early days of New Zealand's response or expected response to the pandemic did not look good.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the, you know, when, if we cast our minds back to that point, it felt like we were on the same track as a lot of the other countries that got overrun. You know, we had our cases starting to spiral very rapidly. We were starting to see community transmission. And, you know, I think this was, I made reference to the Global Health Security Index study, which had us pretty, you know, getting 54 out of 100, excuse me, in terms of our pandemic preparedness. So you'd have to say at that point, we looked like a country which was going to do very poorly.
Who rated, you know, best in that survey, by the way?
The US, yeah, by far. And it was, you know, the survey ultimately was about the level of preparedness, the tools that you had access to, but not really how you would use them. And I think the big thing which ultimately became the basis of the piece was that you can have the best tools and facilities in the world, but if you don't have clear, crisp, consistent communication from the top of government down to its departments, to the private sector and media, then, you know, it almost doesn't matter. Like, you're going to get confusion and chaos flying out of that. And my piece was essentially an attempt to survey all of the different pieces of government and, you know, outside of government that came together to achieve the kind of consistency of behaviour that helped us get to the point where tomorrow we're looking at opening up again without any of the, you know, without the kind of danger that we have been or seems likely in a lot of the other countries which are opening up right now.
So when did it turn, in your analysis, from this sort of potentially shambolic, she'll be right, disorganised New Zealand to suddenly something a bit more positive and effective?
I mean, I think that the turning point for me was the announcement of the level system on March 21st. And, you know, in the piece I note that the way that announcement came about wasn't potentially the best, the peak of the sort of messaging, if you'll recall, it was midday on a Saturday. Jacinda Ardern doing a kind of what looked like a presidential or a wartime address in front of the flag at her desk, but it hadn't really been conveyed that there was something big happening. You got a bit of a sense of it, but not what it was, and there was a bit more sort of gravity to it, whereas she's been a lot more sort of casual, relatable subsequently. But the main thing that you got out of that was, in fact, that we were going to a system whereby there were levels which defined your behaviour and that the government would tell you which level you were at. And, you know, like it applied a superstructure to the limits of what we were allowed to do that was sort of made intuitive sense. And, you know, even the fact of us being at level two, it took the patchwork of actions which had been made prior to then, border closures, asking kind of inbound travellers to self-isolate for 2 weeks, and it gave them a logic. And I think that is, to me, the single biggest thing that helped us get to where we are.
That, in fact, the level system was a communication tool above anything else. It wasn't so much what we were doing at each level, but it was a way of helping New Zealand to understand what was being proposed and how to behave.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's striking when you go back and listen to that announcement was that it you know, it has changed quite radically since then. The idea was that different parts of the country would be in different levels at the same time. I don't think the goal was particularly elimination when we first started. It was a more of a containment goal and to try and allow different parts of the country to live in different ways according to what was possible at the time. But the beauty of levels, and I think that's why you've seen it adopted, albeit not very well communicated in the UK this week, is that it allows you to kind of convey a lot in a very simple structure and then to change the terms of that structure as you go without kind of breaking the system. And then you could overlay other concepts like bubbles and, you know, all the stuff that we've become aware of, you know, physical distancing, et cetera. It can fit into these concepts, but it meant that even people who aren't necessarily paying a huge amount of attention to media or don't ordinarily still have a way of kind of using a shorthand that conveys where we are.
I've seen a bit of criticism of the Prime Minister in those speeches and in the 1 p.m. briefings that she is talking down to people, speaking to us like children, that sort of thing. How would you characterise her tone and her sort of use of language in her regular addresses to the nation?
Oh, I think it's absurd to criticise her for talking to us as if we're children. I mean, I think it's important to note that those 1 p.m. briefings are, you know, as I say in the piece, that they're viewed by around 500,000 people a day. That's the five-plus audience on TVNZ alone, you know, and you add in three and the various radio things, you're probably getting not far off 1 million. And a lot of those are going to be children, you know? And, like, I think that speaking, like, if you might be a really sophisticated person, but you can still understand it, but you don't want to make it so that it excludes anyone. And I think having a simplicity and a clarity and a particular staging of those announcements has been really, really impressive. You know, I think that there are, as with any kind of government reaction to complexity, there are things that you can fault them on. But I think that that Ardern's style of speech in the 1 p.m. briefings, you know, is in many ways the single most sort of significant difference between us and other leaders who have been more combative, who have moved their positions, who have tended to have a different style. And as a result, you've had partisans of either side kind of, you know, behaving differently out the back of that, whereas I think there was a level of depoliticisation that happened with the event here, and Ardern speaking in that style with that clarity to a mass audience, excluding no one, including children, is part of why the communication has been so successful.
And it has been successful. That's the interesting thing. I did an interview recently by someone who divides the world up into two different categories, the rule followers and the rule breakers. And New Zealand is actually in the rule breakers category. We are loose. We don't really like being told what to do. And so the real triumph here might be that we actually listened to this instruction.
Yeah, that's what I think is interesting, because, I mean, I've seen some people disputing my characterisation of New Zealand as a sort of an unruly nation. I don't mean that we're, you know, like, out of control or kind of particularly criminal. I mean that we are a country that values our freedoms, that, you know, is very sort of outdoorsy, that prides itself on its sort of individualism. We've never lived in an authoritarian state where there is a lot more, you know, control of media, faith in government, compliance amongst citizenry under normal times. Yet they induced a kind of that level of behavioural compliance that you'd be might more commonly associate with more authoritarian governments. And I think to do that in such a short space of time with very little sort of active resistance, you know, that points to how successful it was. And, you know, there is a real sense in the country right now of you can feel the whoosh of the bullet going past, and that doesn't mean that there aren't more bullets to come or that there weren't errors made along the way, but I think, as I said at the end, you know, if you look at what the government set out to do going in and what it achieved by the end, on that narrow but incredibly important score, this has been a masterclass in terms of communication. That doesn't absolve them from any criticism, or and there are plenty of things that give me disquiet. You know, even down to the leak, the timing of the data dump last week and the leak of the communication saying that the government basically didn't need to answer journalists' questions or put ministers up for a conversation. But I think if you focus on the actual communication of the campaign, both the style of the ad campaign and the messaging from the likes of Ardern and Bloomfield and Robertson and so on, it's pretty extraordinary to think about it and what it has achieved.
I just want to finish by talking about the posters and the advertising, because it's really easy to make fun of the people sitting in government departments in charge of doing the graphic design, working on their logos and typefaces, but actually you've been impressed by those as well.
Yeah, I think the campaign was pretty amazing, because it managed to convey a sort of a level of importance to obeying it without, you know, I think that the choice of language, the choice of typeface, even the choice of colours, and the way that they were all those elements, those graphical elements were assembled. I remember, you know, very clearly the first sort of walk I did after level four on a weekend, beautiful day, and there were all these phantom street posters, AO street posters around the area where I am. And, you know, I was sort of looking at them and going, this should be very alarming. This is just such a clear signal, you know, apart from the fact there are no cars on the roads, such a clear signal that our lives have changed and are in danger. Yet something about the stay home, save lives message and the way that that was all put together, it felt instead like a sort of had reassuring quality, and that it sort of implied a collective responsibility and an opportunity to contribute for everyone. And that, you know, given all the different ways that you could make that message, the different emotions you could deploy, fear, etc., the fact that they chose to articulate in that way seems, you know, still seems to me pretty impressive. And there are people I know who are sort of in the advertising and design world who talk about that, and the ubiquity of it, the way that it was just suddenly everywhere, as being, you know, pretty impressive to their eyes as well.
Duncan Grieve, really appreciate your time today, and we'll send people to our website, rnz.co.nz/Jesse, where they can link to your whole piece. Thanks for writing it.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Cheers, Jesse.
It's Duncan Grieve, founder of the spin-off website.